the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL wire site that covers the Arizona Cardinals, recording this week, episode 697, one of our off-season shows, recording with my co-host, who's with me, Seth Cox, from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site. And you know, we're still about five and a half weeks away from free agency. This week we have, like, next week we'll actually be able to talk a little bit drafty prospect stuff because the Shrine Bowl and the Senior Bowl happen, so we'll be able to talk about that. But Seth, you know, it's still quiet in Cardinals land, other than, you know, for the first time in the last two seasons, Jonathan Scanlon is going to have to find somebody new on his staff as their linebackers coach, Sam Cephas, has taken a defensive coordinator job with Virginia Tech. So there you go. We got to have somebody else to coach linebackers.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see where they go with that because they have a outside linebackers coach, but they don't have a assistant linebackers coach, which isn't unheard of, right? But at the same token, now the guy's name has completely escaped me. Sam Cephas, who left to be the Virginia Tech defensive coordinator. So congratulations to him. Upgrade in position, pay, all of that. You and I always discuss this when it comes to NFL stuff. This is an interesting one for Sam because Virginia Tech has not been very good lately. So good luck on that one. But
yeah, well, he's coached at the college ranks. He's been a DC before. He was a DC over at Wofford. So
yeah. So, but you know, but Cephas came to the Cardinals via the Vikings, and he was the assistant linebacker coach. So you know, if you're looking at in-house replacements, the Cardinals don't have a assistant, but they have an outside linebacker coach. But so, is that something that they could do theoretically? Absolutely. You know, it's just one of those things, though, that you look at and you kind of go through and see where that would kind of end up, right? But for now, I don't know if there's going to be a move.
It'll be probably someone we've never heard of.
I mean, I guess it could theoretically be Ronald Booker. I'd have to really look into his background.
Yeah, well, because he's their defensive quality control guy right now. Right.
Correct. He was a wide receiver coach there. Safeties coach, DB coach. Yeah, so probably wouldn't be Booker. So it'd be hard to see an in-house move made. Interestingly enough, the other move they made and hasn't been announced formally, but allegedly Derek LeBlanc's not coming back. But this is what's interesting. We're recording at 3:53 on Tuesday, January 28th, just for some information. That LeBlanc's bio is still on the coach's page, but Cameron Davis's is not. Cameron Davis was the assistant defensive line coach who was also reported to not be coming back to the Arizona Cardinals. And now these are not like firings or anything like this. This is just a decision. I don't know if it's Gannon. I don't know if it's Austin Fort. Probably you would assume the collaboration of the two, would you not?
Yeah, I would guess so. And it might be as well that their contract expired.
That's what I was going to say. So most, from what I understand, most assistant coaches get a 2-year deal.
Yeah.
And so I would assume that means that they did not renew LeBlanc's. Interesting. But yeah, I mean, so it's interesting because I talked to a buddy that's a defensive coach, and now this is at a much lower level, so I don't want anybody to be like, I'm talking out of turn or speaking with NFL players or coaches or anything like that. So I just want that to be understood. But I, you know, because I think the first thing that I thought of was like, that's kind of unfair to Derek LeBlanc, right? Because every big ticket item that they've, oh, he changed it. He put Cardinals first. It was the Lions. Okay, that makes more sense now. So he had to redo it. That makes more sense.
I'm like, that's not a name I recognize in the least.
Yeah. So, but it goes back. So, you know, you look at it. So I was talking to my buddy and I was asking him about LeBlanc. And I'm like, do you think potentially that the injury, like his style of coaching, could have led to all these injuries? Now, I know that Darius Robinson was not an arm, but to have, what was it, four or five guys go down with bicep, tricep injuries, that's an 2 years, astonishing.
Right. Both of the last 2 years. Yeah, I don't know. Like, position coaching thing that's always, and you know, it might very well simply be that someone that's more connected to Rollis and Gannon is now going to be available.
Right. And so that'll be interesting to see how that works out. Right. You know, but so to your point, Pegler's still on the staff. So that could be one of those situations where maybe it's just an in-house.
Could be. Anyway, either way, that you'll see staff. I don't see them shrinking the staff.
No, and this is not uncommon for this time of year.
Like, no, 100%. The contracts have, I think coaches' contracts go through like the middle of January.
Right.
And so, yeah. And so it'll be interesting to see. And there's a couple of names like, well, Drew Petzing didn't get the head coaching job in Chicago, but there was interest in a couple other guys. Izzy Wolfork, the Bears had interest in Izzy Wolfork, their quarterback's coach. They ultimately hired someone else as their offensive coordinator. And it sounds like offensive line coach Clayton Adams could land an OC job in Dallas under Brian Schottenheimer, which would be interesting. Honestly, my take on assistant coaches and position coaches, it doesn't matter much because, and I say this a lot, I don't think at the NFL level there are, I think it is rare when you have a bad coach. They're all quality coaches. And to me, it's about situation, personnel, and fit. And so, like, you lose a position coach, I'm like, that's fine. I mean, that they want to get better jobs. Right. They want to get promoted.
Right. And the only ones that, I don't want to say the only ones, but the ones that are harder when they're like young guys that you're grooming to take the next, yeah, to the next step. So for instance, if they saw Sifkis as being the DC in waiting for when Rallis gets poached, because you know, Rallis is a hot commodity. That's a tough one. Again, it's hard to really judge Derek LeBlanc in 2 years. However, he's in his 50s. He's been coaching for 20 plus years, and this was his first head position coach job in the NFL. So I don't think that that's going to be like a massive loss, to your point, right? I thought he did yeoman work. I think you would agree with that.
Right. I mean, he got Naquan Jones, guys like Naquan Jones and Ben Stilley and, you know, other guys that I don't remember their names right now to make contributions in theirs, and like in the small amount of time when that's the practice squad call-ups. Roy Lopez really kind of developed a little bit. Dante Stills. It's just been the, and LJ Collier as well. Like these, they've made progress. So it'll be interesting to see where they go coaching wise. But that isn't like what we wanted to focus on for this show. In fact, like I said, that was news to me. The Derek LeBlanc thing was something Seth just told me just now. So now I pulled up the tweet. I'm like, oh, that did in fact happen. So, but what I wanted to talk about in this show is we're going to kind of go through the free agent list that the Cardinals have. Not the exclusive rights guys, because they will be back, and there's only one of them. It's tight end Travis Volklik. He'll be back. Whether or not he makes the roster, that's a different story. But we want to go through each of the free agents and kind of go through, got to bring him back. Doesn't really matter one way or another, or not. Like, we rather would see them move on. So it's kind of a yes, bring him back. Doesn't really matter either way. No, don't bring them back. And so we want to start on the offensive side of the ball. And the truth is they don't have as many offensive free agents. Here is the list. No quarterbacks, no running backs. You've got Zay Jones and Greg Dortch. Dortch technically a restricted free agent, so you could tender him. Don't think they're going to do that. No tight ends, except for Travis Volklik, but he's exclusive rights, so if they want him, they'll bring him back. And then you have the following offensive lineman: Carter O'Donnell, restricted. They're not going to tender him that way, so he'll just be he'll be unrestricted. Jackson Barton, Kelvin Beachum, Evan Brown, Tristan Colon, Will Hernandez. Let's go down that list and say, bring him back. Doesn't really matter. Don't bring him back. Let's start with Dortch. Let's for the restricted free agents. Let's operate under the assumption none of them will be tagged, but will be that if they were to come back, they'll come back something less than the restricted tender. Greg Dortch, yes, bring him back. No, doesn't really matter. Or no, move on.
Doesn't really matter. I mean, here's what I'll say about Dortch. I love the effort, the player, and the story. He was given more of an opportunity this year and just didn't hit it, right? So that makes it tough to be like, oh, got to bring him back.
Yeah, he's definitely not a yes. I mean, you could do better. It's like, and says, so bring him back or whatever. It doesn't matter. I don't expect him to have a significant role, and especially because he really is only a slot guy that you can use, kind of a guy. And for ultimately what he ended up being a less dynamic gadget player than Rondale Moore, and I wrote about, remember him? That was the trade that nobody won. Rondale Moore for Desmond Ridder was a wash of nothing for basically.
Yeah, and so it makes it tough. Like, you don't really, I mean, like you said, it's not a massive loss, unfortunately.
What about Zay Jones?
I mean, what they paid him last year, 2.25.
There's also Zach Pascal. I forgot that, so I'll get this. So Zay Jones, I kind of would like to see him back, but I'm definitely not move on. I'm somewhere between yes and either way, because I thought he would be that. I know the 5-game suspension was probably set him back significantly. I thought he would be able to have more of an impact than he did. And he had a few nice catches late in the year, but he's a guy that has a proven track record that he can perform and kind of stayed healthy this year. So it's somewhere between yes and doesn't really matter.
Yeah, and I'm in the same boat.
What about Zach Pascal?
No.
Yeah, move on. Like, you can get a cheaper.
That's the thing with his salary being the same as Jones, I would say you can only bring back one of those two, and I would prefer they prioritize Zay over Pascal.
Yeah, and Pascal does they do use him a little bit in some run sets because he is pretty good at blocking, or at least is a good effort guy at blocking. What about Carter O'Donnell
and the offensive line? I don't think this is the place to worry about bringing him back.
What about Jackson Barton?
Same. I like Barton, but again, I think they've, you know, with Christian, Jones.
Chris Jones, yeah.
You know, I don't think it's as much of a priority.
Kelvin Beachum.
I put him more in the Zay than Dortch category, but again, it's not a priority, I think.
Yeah, I like Beachum. And because I don't like, if you don't go with Beachum, you still need to find a starting capable veteran, because yeah. I'm not ready for Christian Jones unless he really looks good in the offseason. And so for now, I would say yes to Kelvin Beachum, because Jonah Williams gives you some uncertainty, Christian Jones gives you some uncertainty, and at minimum, you've got a reliable guy. And Beachum, I was very, very pleased with the way that Beachum played this season, especially at his age. He is not ready to hang him up. From the way it sounds, based on what I heard from him last offseason, he wants to play till the wheels fall off, until nobody is calling him anymore. Like, he's not going to go, I'm retiring. It will be, I'm retiring because it's been a year since anyone called me. Evan Brown. What would you say to Evan Brown?
The problem doing this now is you have to answer yes to one of these guys, right?
Like, it's for me, it is, yeah. Like, well, if you say don't say yes to Evan Brown, you probably want to say yes to Will Hernandez, or you at least have you already have a game plan for someone more impactful. So, it's for me, it's between yes and either way, because of assuming if you don't get him, if you don't re-sign him, that you're going out and getting someone at least as good.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's like when you need two starting guards potentially, and I know we're hopeful on Isaiah Adams, but you know, you want to go in with,
right? Like, are they going into this offseason thinking they're already penciling Adams in? Well, like they did with Paris on the left tackle side, they penciled him in over there, then signed Jonah Williams, and then they're like, yeah, we know what we're doing. Or is it a case where maybe, but we're still going to get two guys who could be starters, and if he beats them, fantastic. I don't know. Tristan Colon. Doesn't matter to me. I'm not saying move on from him, but he is what he is, which is, and being in the system, I think that continuity is helpful. So if you bring him back, cool. Just please don't be a starter.
Yeah, and that's kind of the whole thing, right? You want him as a decent depth piece.
And lastly, Will Hernandez. Yes, doesn't matter, no.
So I was doing some, like, look-aheads on these, like, salaries, and the projection for Will makes me a yes. That being said, his injury is concerning in the sense that you and I were talking about off the air. We talked about the other day. This is a mammoth man who relies on uncanny movement skills for his size. That is a, I don't want to say scary, but that is a worrisome thing, right? So
yeah.
That'll be the biggest thing, but I've seen his projected salary post injury be 2 years and $4.5 million. I don't think that's a bad thing.
Four and a half per, like 2 million.
No, four and a half million total over 2 years.
Oh,
because he's coming off the ACL.
That's a nope. If you get 2 years for, like, because the minimum salary for someone at his stage in his career is like 1.4 million. So
I was gonna say, I think it's like 1.3 number.
Yeah. So, like, if you can get that, so now the question is, at age, he'll be 30 when the season starts. So he's 29, but he will be 30 when the season starts. Just before the season starts. Would he take that small a 2 year deal? I could see him taking a 1 year. But if it's a two, like I don't think he would. I don't know if he would do the two because he's not like Beecham. Beecham signed a deal like that 2 years ago. It was like 2 year, $5 million. Is Will at the Beecham stage yet? I don't know.
Yeah, that's a fair question. And you know, it's tough when you're looking at it because it's just, how do you deal with this? Like, what is your cutoff point? I mean, if say he wanted four and you said, okay, that's fine, but we're only going to guarantee. So say he wanted four a year.
Yeah.
So
but just guarantee year one.
Yeah. And you're like, we will only guarantee you a year. Like, we'll only guarantee this year. But that's the other thing, too, is like, I mean, he got
tracks aren't injured.
He got injured week five, right?
Yeah. Yeah. He should be like being able to play. Now, he won't be part of the offseason program, but he 100% should be full go in training camp.
Yeah, and so that's the hard part is like, is he going to be, like you said, full go, is he going to be the Will Hernandez that he was? We've talked about his impact and importance and why we love him, you know, all that. So
yeah, I think, you know, I wonder if he's going to be, if because of the knee, he will be a late summer signing.
And that's what, and that's
spring
what,
signing.
And that's what my thought process was with this whole thing. Like, he's going to come back in June type of stuff. Like, if they can see if he can move, and then you go, okay, you know what? I like it. Or no, right? Like,
and we know, like, the, you know, that 30-year mark is kind of where they've been drawing the line mostly. So we'll have to wait and see. Coming up next on the Rise of Secret podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's look at the defensive side of the ball and the specialists. Yes, no, doesn't really matter. That's coming up next on Rise of Secret. We're back on the Rise of Secret podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web, talking about the Cardinals scheduled free agents now on the defensive side of the ball, the guys who will be who are not going to be under contract. Priority, are they a guess? Please bring them back. Don't bring them back, time to move on, or it doesn't really matter. Let me give you the rundown. Starting kind of front seven, on the defensive line, you got LJ Collier, Naquan Jones, Roy Lopez, and Kyrus Tonga. On the edge, nearly everybody, Jesse Luketa, restricted free agent, Baron Browning, Victor Dimakagi, Dennis Gardeck, and Julian Aquara. Inside linebacker, Kaiser White and Chris Barnes. None of their cornerbacks hit a free agency, but Joey Blunt, special teams extraordinaire, and Andre Sachere, who only was on the roster about the back half of the season, also a free agent. And then our specialists, you've got Aaron Brewer and Matt Prater, and Michael Pilardi. We'll get to that. But defensive line, let's start with LJ Collier. For me, he is a yes. I want to see him back. It doesn't matter. They'll bring someone back, but I would love to see Collier back because he was impactful. He loves it here, and he would be willing to play in that rotation that the Cardinals plan.
I was going to say, the biggest thing with him is he knows his spot. And that's always tough. And I hate saying it because it always comes off as rude to these guys. But it's like, you're a rotational guy. And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. The Cardinals desperately need that. So I don't think you and I, you know, realizing that he's a rotational guy or talking about him being a rotational guy is disrespectful to him. It's just a reality of what his ability is. And that's the truth on him and what they need from him. So yeah, I'm with you. I think depth would be wonderful, but he's got to understand his role and what he's, you know, what they see him as opposed to, you know. Now, obviously, he's had some experience here where, there's a lot of injuries around this organization. So maybe it's worth him taking a shot coming back here, right? But
yeah.
Yeah, I would love to see him come back on a nice, like you said, like 1-2 year deal.
Right, and he's really good in the locker room. He's fun. He brings the fun to that group. Naquan Jones, you know, I liked him, but he was a late addition. I would say honestly, the rotation, if they had everyone back healthy. I liked guys that they had in terms of rotation, Naquan Jones, but I am going to put him in the, it doesn't really matter. Although he does have a little bit of upside to me.
Yeah. And I'm fine with it. I think again, it's a good fit. And like you said, it makes sense.
Roy Lopez for me, while really nice what he did. I would like to see him back, but honestly, when you've got, because like if you know coming into this year, you've got, and now granted, you don't have a true two down nose tackle on the roster right now. Justin Jones and Bilal Nichols both are quite capable of playing in that role, although they do more than that. Bilal has been a two down nose tackle before. Lopez, what he gave you, and the same with Kyrus Tonga, is that he gave, and what we've seen for the last couple of years, that this defensive staff likes having that true nose, that two down nose. Like that's why Lucky Fotu had that success that year, and a little less so Rashard Lawrence. I think they liked that the bulky big guy to sit in the middle. So while personally, I think Roy Lopez is kind of an either way. I would like to see him come back. There's a lot of reasons why, but it's, you know, in terms of impact, I'm like, either way.
Yeah. And I'm with you. I mean, I think having, if you can have these guys on the roster again, it's a good thing because you're not looking for them to be starters, right? You're looking at them as key depth rotational guys. So that's a big deal. And I like it. I would like to see them come back again. But again, it's not a priority, right?
Yeah. Kyrus Tonga, he's the one guy. Well, this would be nice, but like, whatever. I'm not saying move on from him, but I am indifferent towards his return, because he's just, you know, backup nose tackle. And you can guess you probably get a backup nose tackle a dime a dozen around the NFL.
Right.
Going to the edge, let's start with Baron Browning. He's a yes. Like unless he's asking for like crazy money, bring him back. Like you traded for him for a half season. You didn't trade a sixth round pick to have him for half a season. That you have to believe the intent was to bring him back. And so I'm like, you kind of need that back, because otherwise you can't go into next year with Zaven, Xavier Thomas, and then the question mark of B.J. Ojulari. Baron Browning, having been in the system, he's got upside. He's a yes, bring him back for me.
Yes, I would agree.
Victor Dimakaji, indifferent. I'm indifferent because he does do a lot. He's a core special teams player, and when he's out there, he does, you know, he's a solid edge setter. He plays with motor. So for me, it's like, I don't say, I move on from him, but they could.
I mean, it's tough. I mean, what do you see his value being?
He's a back of the roster OLB who plays special teams.
I mean, that's the thing, and limited athletically, right?
Yeah.
So it's almost like you're okay moving on from him because of all of those things. Because you would assume you could get a little more, right?
Yeah. You know, fairness, he's still like only like a couple of months older than Xavier Thomas.
Right.
Dennis Gardeck, love the guy. It's probably time to move on.
Yes.
Probably time to move on. And sadly,
and especially because his value as a special teamer is what's going to get him paid the way he is.
Yeah. And then Julian Okwara, whatever, you know, he offered really nothing. So yeah, move on, bring someone better. Jesse Laketta, who's the restricted free agent. For me, low key, yes, for Laketta, but it's not a priority.
Correct. And that's how I would look at Laketta coming back.
Kaiser White. It feels like it feels like we know that they're moving on. I don't know. That's the one I'm like, it feels like they're moving on based on what he tweeted or put on Instagram, what it was like a few weeks ago. You like, I don't know. Like, it wouldn't, like, based on everything we know about him, it would make sense that he'd be a priority to come back, but he didn't play. Like, his volume numbers were there, but the impact did not seem to be quite as good.
Yeah, and, you know, I think he's great for the situation of, like, setting the culture and things of that nature, but the play, you know, and the health are the two things that you have to look at for him. And if you can upgrade, I think that's what you do.
Yeah. Chris Barnes. For me, that's a yes, no, because he is what he is. He's depth who plays special teams and can start, but he's not a guy you need to move on from he's the type of player that you need on your roster.
Right. He's just a nice depth piece.
Then the two safeties, Joey Blunt and Andre Sachere, I don't need to say, yeah, move on from them. Either one have value because of what they can do on special teams. Blunt is really good on special teams, but you can get that from other players. Like, it's not like what he does is not replaceable. And Sachere is not quite as good on special teams, but also gives you reliable depth as, like, a third or fourth safety. So for either one, it's not definitely not yes, but it's definitely not no, got to move on. It's whatever.
Yeah, and I would agree with those sentiments.
Aaron Brewer, long snapper. Unless they have a plan for someone else, he's definitely a yes. Why mess things up?
We talked about this, I think, last year, but I could be wrong. But I pretty much always say the same thing. Until he doesn't want to come back, he should come back.
Right, because he's still playing well. We go to Michael Pilardi, punter. Well, he was never the plan anyway. They've got Gillikin under contract. So, yes, move on. We've already got a punter.
I'm sure he'll be back over the summer and then get cut in August.
and then lastly, Matt Prater, free agent. And the Cardinals have Chad Ryland signed this year. As much, you know, if Ryland, you trust Ryland 100%. Time for Prater to move on. He's going to sign with the you can't convince me that he's not going to sign with the 49ers.
Right.
Because, you know, NFL teams do it. It goes from old kicker, old and reliable, because they're expensive, to young. And when that young doesn't work out, then they go back really old. And so that Prater is literally the perfect example of that. The 49ers, Jake Moody, guy they drafted, who, you know, we both were like, he's a stud. Very unreliable for the 49ers. And especially if they have hopes of returning to greatness next year, they're not going to lean on him. And Prater would be the perfect guy for that because he is reliable. And as long as his body's holding up, he's really good. But, okay, adios, Matt. We'll miss you, but it's time.
Yep, good luck.
Coming up next on the Res here at Podcast, Mr. Cardinals Talk on the Web. Now we're going to move on to talking about playoff reactions as we saw the conference championships on Sunday. Eagles, Chiefs in the Super Bowl. What do we think? That's coming up next on Rise Up, See Red. We're back on the Rise Up Series podcast, the best our Cardinals talk on the web, looking at the conference championships over the weekend, where the Eagles absolutely, you know, rolled over the Philadelphia Eagles, over the Washington Commanders. And then the Kansas City Chiefs survived against the Buffalo Bills. And aside from the total, which I was wrong on the total for the KC game, I expected Washington to be overwhelmed by Philadelphia, and I expected the Chiefs to end up winning late. And could there have been, like, the blueprint was already there. Everyone, like, at the general public, they're like, Eagles, Chiefs, like, but that's going to be the right Super Bowl. And it was exactly how it went. Saquon Barkley was unstoppable again. And even though Washington put up some points, that Philly defense was good. I mean, the Eagles were, with the addition of Barkley this year, by far the best team and the best team down the stretch in the NFC. And so it makes sense, right?
Yeah, and you know, we talked about Philly, Washington, and eventually that kind of Cinderella story was going to stop, and you just hoped it wouldn't have been as ugly as it was, right? I mean, this was just a non-competitive game. Jaden Daniels and the Commanders offense just kind of had and I know they statistically they put up some numbers, but I mean, what was it, 4 turnovers in the game? They once again were just kind of waiting for Jaden Daniels to bail them out. And that's been kind of the MO of what you were hoping to not have to see for them. And the fact that they just lack, they lack talent. You and I are big Zach Ertz guys. We loved Ertz in his time here, but when he's your leading receiver in a game, because nobody outside of Terry McLaurin scares the other team, it's a problem.
Yeah.
The Commanders' run game was a joke. I know most of I know that Jaden had some nice runs, but again, a lot of those runs were him just making plays. They weren't great designs. Like I go back to the Saquon Barkley touchdown on the first play of the game, right? Like, that was an amazing run. Amazing. And you sit there and you look at it and you go, well, why do you talk about that? But what Cliff asked Jaden to do is not good. Because Saquon didn't get touched till he was 20 yards downfield. Like the back end of the run was all Saquon. The front end of the run was amazing run design, fantastic blocking, Jalen Hurts getting into the right call, like all of that. Like, that's what you needed. And in this game, and I know that Philly's defensive line is incredible, in this game, for your running backs to go 19 for 51 is, I mean, that's a problem.
Yeah.
And there was just no flow to the game offensively for the Commanders. They looked like we kind of expected them to look this year, right? Like,
well, and it comes down to, it also basically came down to defense too, because they couldn't match. Washington goes and takes the 18 play drive and ends up with a field goal.
Well, boom. but you and I, right?
And then
you
and it was fumble, and then touchdown, right. And then field goal, and then they missed a field goal. So it was you got down. They were down 14-3, and that was basically it, because Philly scored on 4 of their 5 possessions and should have scored on all 5. They missed a field goal in the first half. And that was
And that was the only thing that really gave the Commanders life, right? Going into halftime.
Yeah.
You know, and it was one of those situations that you kind of look at it. And again, we talked about this after the Lions Commanders game last week. Like, you knew what their kryptonite was. Their kryptonite was their defense. Like, when you need a rookie to basically drag you offensively to a championship game, you're playing with fire. And that's what happened. I mean, they got away with it last week because their offense was just playing at such a high level, and the Lions, and specifically Jared Goff, played such a tremendously bad game. But the reality was, like, this was never this team, as good as they have been all season, you were never convinced that they were competing for a championship in this game. Like,
no,
like, it was just so one-sided, and you know, you hope that they're prepped and they're ready for next year, and that they can run this back to an extent, because that'll be the one thing to kind of watch moving forward, right? Like, was this a one-hit wonder, or is this a team that's going to sustain success and grow from this this really, really solid season?
And then in the Kansas City Buffalo game, the comment that I made, Patrick Mahomes showed Evan, like, Patrick Mahomes wins in a lot of different ways. We've seen him being just like the absolute wizard dynamic passer, 80,000 passing yards, 3,000 touchdown passes. We've seen him being more game managerish, making some mistakes, but the clutch in the fourth. Patrick Mahomes showed everyone he can also be Josh Allen. he out-Josh Allen'd Josh Allen in that game, which was impressive.
Yeah, and I was reading some really interesting comments about, you know, the whole situation and how, you know, people don't understand this, and it's something you and I have discussed, and it's difficult for people to understand. You know, everybody loves the Ben Johnson stuff, you know, the creativity and the stuff that they do offensively, right? Like the
touchdowns to,
yeah, to
Dan Skipper, and then
or the hook and laterals, or yes, you know, the fake falling down, throwing a touchdown, like, all of that stuff is fantastic. Don't get me wrong. It's super entertaining. It's fun to watch. But the reality is, it's one of those situations where you're like, you look at it and you go, why are you, excuse my French, blowing your wad in the regular season? Like, why are you shooting? Why are you shooting all the bullets in your gun already? And that's just genuinely what they were doing. And then you get to the best team of the last decade, I guess, not quite yet, right? But after this one,
hands down, like, you can't imagine anyone being better over the back half of the decade.
So you look at it and you go, oh, we've been pulling back all of that Mahomes running stuff all season. Like, it's been in the hopper. We just weren't going to show it to you idiots because we didn't need to. We were just that dominant. It would have been silly for us to push it at that point.
Pat is like, don't let Pat get hurt. So, you know, right. But he can do it, but he only does it if he absolutely needs to.
And so, you know, they just genuinely were, you know, we knew that they were the better team, but they genuinely just, I mean, they got so much out of Mahomes and his game. It was fun to watch because, you know, it goes back to what you and I talk about all the time off the air and what we try to explain to people, but it is what it is. Like, you're never going to convince people. Josh Allen is the best non-Patrick Mahomes quarterback in the NFL. And I don't think that's particularly close. I mean, I know people love Lamar Jackson, but I mean, if you put roster to roster, and I say this all the time, if you put roster to roster, Ravens are a better team than the Bills. Like, they just are. You know, but when people go, oh, you need to find a quarterback like Josh Allen to win, I'm like, well, there's not another one. And two, that just means you're going to lose in heartbreaking fashion to the Chiefs. Like,
yes,
you, eventually you have to understand that that's not, it's just not a way to build your team. And the way to build your team, the way to build your roster, and the way to put yourself in a position to be successful is to do what we're seeing in Detroit, what we're seeing in Philadelphia, where you go, oh, okay, this makes sense. Like, look at this talented roster that can win in spite of what their quarterback is doing. That doesn't need their, I mean, again, you look at the box score for Jalen Hurts in the playoffs. And this week was better. I don't want to take anything away from how well he played this week, but it was like he was playing on air, if we're being completely fair. But like, Jalen Hurts, look at these numbers this season, Jess. He had a game where they won by 12 and he completed 13 passes. Last week they beat the Rams in the playoffs. You know, the first round, sorry, he completed 13 passes. They beat the Rams, he completed 15. Like, they don't need him to do anything except not make a mistake when they ask him to throw the football. And that, you know, that's what Jared Goff couldn't do. And to be fair, I mean, we've obviously all made fun of Goff over the last month, but, or the last couple of weeks, but like, the reality was they were so injured, man. They were just so,
yeah, it was the injuries they suffered on defense ultimately were their demise, but at the end,
right? Like, they couldn't compete with these teams, man. They just didn't have the guys. So you look at it and you go, this is, you know, this is how you have to build. And so when people are like, oh, Jaden Daniels just lost by 32 in the NFC Championship game. They barely squeaked by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and they had probably the best game of their season offensively in the divisional round against the Lions. Like, that's not the recipe you want to follow, right? The recipe you want to follow is having a team that's built to win no matter what no matter how much you need from the quarterback. Like, eventually you'll need a quarterback to make a play. I get that. But the longer you can take that out of their hands, the better you are. And that's the thing, is like, you know, if your goal is to be like the Bills, well, then you're going to be searching for a really, really long time to find that guy.
Yeah. Yeah. And in fairness, the Chiefs have done exactly that. Like, it's over the last couple of years, Mahomes doesn't have to do as much. Now, I do want to get, because everyone's talking about this, the officiating, the two calls, the one where he had the simultaneous catch, but the ball touched the ground. I 100% thought that was a catch, because, like, while the ball did touch the ground, it didn't become dislodged.
Right. And I thought that was the rule. Right.
Yeah.
What do I know?
Well, and then the other one, the QB sneak, I thought, from what I was watching the game with my son Diego, when from the vantage point, it seemed to say that he got the first. But from anything I saw from the television, and I wouldn't have faulted the refs for saying that he got it or not, because it's that close. That sort of play is hard to do. But because he had the ball tucked into his chest, I didn't think he got the ball there. And I thought the vantage point that they had, and they couldn't overturn on review. And so, you know, I don't think there's any conspiracy going on. The NFL would love Buffalo to get to the Super Bowl. They would love it.
If there was a conspiracy, why would they pick Kansas City, Missouri right. to be the team reaping the benefits of this, right?
That's like saying the NBA was rigged when the Spurs are winning championships. San Antonio, really?
Right.
they're like, hey, we want this, you know, this city to be the recipient of
not even the most important city in Texas.
Right. So that's the thing, is if it was a big deal, you'd see, you know, if it was rigged in that sense, you'd see teams like the Cowboys, you'd see teams like
the Jets. It would have 100% been the Jets with Aaron Rodgers.
Either, I was going to say, either of the New York football teams, like the New York City football teams, right? Like, those are the teams that they would have done that. And so it makes it tough, but, like, at the same time, I understand where people are coming from. They just,
and, well, Mahomes is a superstar, and he does get superstar calls. And he does exploit those jobs, those, like he will fiddle with the players knowing that it's gamesmanship. The rule book is the way that it is. And so he makes them hesitate and then slides late. And he knows what the rules are. The officials are told if it's close, call it. You're right. Told to. And so
it's tough.
It sucks. It's a terrible thing, but it's 100% playing within the rules. 100% right. Playing within the rules. And yeah. So yeah. Seth, I know you've got to get out of here. You've got stuff to do, but that will bring us to the end of this edition of the Rise Up Seared podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. I believe, unless we have something urgent come up, we will make this the one show we do this week, perhaps, and then jump into the Senior Bowl next week and how that went. But maybe we'll have something else later this week. But if not, we'll be back next week. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Rue. Thanks for listening. As always, we will be back again soon.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise Up Red Sea, Be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up See Red.